Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Comic Chronicle Podcast. I'm your guys' host, Dakota Morgan, coming to you from Phoenix, Arizona. Today's episode, we get deep. I have with me David Nakayama, the artist on the channel here today, on the podcast here today, to say the least. And guess what, folks? Like I said, we get deep. Like, we talk about self-appreciation of yourself, artists getting credit, you know, living in Hawaii. We talk a bit mentally about, like, hurdles as a creative and, you know, living life as a creative. Like, we talk a bit about that. So if you guys enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe to wherever you're listening right now, whatever podcast app, wherever. If you want to catch me on YouTube, you can watch my pretty ugly face over there for the podcast, as well as doing video game stuff and dinosaur content. That's Dakota Morgan on YouTube. X, or triple X as they call it, is at DakotaMorgan3. Instagram at Dakota_Morgan97. Twitch, for my raw and uncut video game playthroughs, CodaRex97. Now, big shout out to my fans out there, guys. I have, you know, just big shout out and big thanks to y'all. I really want to say thank you because I've had some fans reach out recently and some longtime listeners want to thank you guys so much for it. Your guys' support means everything. Share the show, you know, post about it, hashtag Comic Chronicle or hashtag Comic Chronicle Podcast. You know, share it out, folks. It means a lot. Now, without further ado, though, let's go ahead and get to what you guys are here for. Let's get into my talk with David.
Let's see. There I am.
Hey, there you are. Pleasure to see
Hello.
You.
Hey, you too. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thank you for joining me on the show, David. It is like, and it's an honor to have you here because you've definitely, it seems like, been a busy little bee recently.
I try.
Yeah.
I waited a long time to get my foot in the door at places like DC and almost 30 years, sadly, but now that I have the opportunity, I'm not going to say no, you know what I mean?
That's fair, yeah, that is fair. By the way, that right sentence alone should tell people, don't give up on what you want to do. Like, that alone should tell people, right? Yeah,
right.
You would think. Now, you seem like you're celebrating X-Men 97. You got an X-Men shirt on, for those who are listening, they don't really see, so...
Oh. Can we see that?
There yeah, I did. Oops, I saw a little bit of the X-Men logo. I mean, it's, if you know it, you can see just a little bit of it. And you're like, oh, X-Men.
And that shows, like, I think there's like a little bit of the E showing. That was enough for you to tell. Amazing.
Yeah. I'm impressed. It's almost like I'm a nerd for this shit. Who would have thought?
Oh, man.
But yeah, so you see, you used to lean off with here. You said you've waited like 30 years. You've been working on it to try to get a DC. But like, you've been an artist for 30 years was, so I mean, I don't want to age you at all. I don't want to do that. That's kind of rude sometimes. But like,
I'm 45 now. Mm-hmm. And when I was 13, I literally, like, right about that time, 92, 91, something like that, I was all in on comics, like the Jim Lee X-Men stuff. And I don't know if we're recording already, but
yes, yeah, yeah.
okay, good. I was all in when I saw that Jim Lee X-Men stuff. I, you know, instantly went from just being a kid who was interested in art to loving comics and wanting to do art for a living. I just wanted to be Jim Lee someday, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I got a lot, like a lot of people. And, you know, like I got an in with Marvel earlier, you know, in my career, and did a lot of stuff with them, did a side trip through video games for 12 years.
Oh, wow.
Came back and did covers about 5 years through that. So there's an overlap in there. But DC didn't happen for me until about 2 or 3 years ago now.
Oh, sure. So if
you do the math, it comes up to be about 30 years between the moment I decided I wanted to do that stuff and when I actually did.
A whole lot of work and lots of nights where you're like, why am I doing this? What the hell am I doing? Like, is it worth it in the end? But honestly, yeah, it's worth it. I think that's what a lot of people should get. I've been doing the show for like 5 years, and people I've talked to, even actors and whatnot too, like, David Harbour, who played Martian Manhunter and Supergirl, I talked to him a while back, a couple years ago now, and you know, he was saying like he wanted to give up at a certain point too, you know, but he stuck it out, and like, look where he's at now. Like, he's done video game stuff as well too, and it seems everybody eventually, if you do comics long enough, it feels like you have a somewhat of a stint in video games, whether you're a writer or an artist, whatever it is. It feels like it eventually goes to games.
It's either that or TV. Like, I was just watching Avatar last night, and I recognized the writer of the episode as a comic book person, Joshua Hill Fielkov.
Oh, yeah.
Who I know that guy has written comics. I have some of those comics. I was like, I know that name.
Yeah.
So there's some flow between the two. And me, as a freelancer, I like to participate in all of it if I can. So, like, tomorrow, coincidentally, Contra comes out, our new Contra video game. I did the key art for. So I love to play in video games, toys, you know, whatever other stuff I can get to beside comics. It's all fun. It's all kind of a matrix of cool things.
Yeah, and it's when you do what is your childhood. Like, I think when you work in stuff that ties into your childhood, it hits different. You know, it's a job where you're like, I can wake up every day happy with this. Like, yeah, there's going to be stressful moments and you're going to be like hustling and all that. But like, I mean, there's a certain point when you see your thing come to life and it's tied in. Like, recently for me, seeing my books come to life, you know, that seeing that be a thing, that's something you can't get anywhere else except the creative field. Like, this feeling, this dopamine hit somewhere in the brain, it activates it. Like, we're the few, we're the cavemen that drew on the walls for the first time. We're just like, look
Accurate,
at this. And now we're doing it now.
totally feel
But
that same way.
yeah, it's a oh.
I would add that I did not get that feeling when I was actively working in video games because it's
Really?
such a big team and you're such a small part of it overall that when it comes out, I had an odd experience where, you know, I had social media, right? And I would put out a sketch of Spider-Man and get you know, let's say 100 likes, right? If I put out, you know, after slaving away on a video game for 2 or 3 years, you would post, you know, your own art of the game that you art directed and say, I made this and get a tenth of the likes. And people just cannot get their head around the fact that it's a person making it, right? They think it's a video game, therefore it's from a company. A company somehow made it. It's just a different experience. Like if I put out a cover, people can get their head around the fact that I made it, that one person made it, but not with the video game. They just see it as an advertisement or something. I don't
Yeah,
know. It's
that's
very
true.
strange.
Yeah, they don't, they think it just pops out like some AI, like, I mean, current AI thing made it, but like they're thinking like, oh, it's just a thing. Because maybe it's because it's hard for people to wrap their brains around. And this is coming from, I mean, I've been playing video games since I've been a little kid, right? And so it's almost 30 years. So we're like, we're at a point here with it, you know. And I think it's what it is because there's so many people there that they just can't wrap their head around, oh, it's a billion people that do it. I can't thank everybody here. So it's a company, like it's just Microsoft. And they rarely give names on there either. That's a part about it too. You rarely
Yeah.
see a writer's name on the case. I would love that. Or an artist, either way, too. Like who made the cover art? Like, unless it's in there in really tiny, like lawyer writing, I've never seen.
Hey guys, Dakota here, coming at you with a little ad break and ways that you can actually help support the show. Maybe asking, how can the hell can you do this? Well, how you can do it is by going into the description for this episode, wherever you guys are listening, and clicking the link on there for Redbubble. That's right, folks. We have the store, and we used to have it and promote it a little bit more, but it's coming back now, folks. The Redbubble store for the Comic Chronicle podcast. Go to the link down below to support. You can get the Comic Chronicle logo, and as well as other logos I have created for the show and for you to wear, on bags. Bags, shirts, sweaters, all stickers, magnets, all the stuff like that. You have Blockbuster Kid, Vigilante in Training, the podcast logo, and much more. So if you guys want to help support the show, go on over. Everything is 25% off for this year. We are doing that, guys, bringing it back for you and giving you guys a discount. So be sure to go over there, check it out, help support the show, and have some pretty good stuff. And now back to the show.
No, they did. I think they go out of their way to not say. So, like, you know, if you liked the God of War games, but you don't know who Raf Garcetti is, that's weird to me, you know. But because, like, that's the guy who kind of did it, you know, this brilliant 3D artist is responsible for the look of that stuff. If you like the look of that stuff, why are we not familiar with that person? Or
Exactly.
likewise, you know, sometimes it does happen. Like Hideo Kojima gets credit for his games personally. Possibly too much credit because obviously a lot of talented people work with him and we don't know any of them. But you get my point. Like it's an odd thing where in comics we're very familiar with who the writers are and who the artists are and they get credit and an artist actually signs the cover. That's comics, but that doesn't exist in most other fields.
No. And I used to run a film podcast back in the day. And also, I worked in the film industry for many years. And I've met a lot of VFX artists too, you know, and a lot of them are just like, we do our job, we get paid, we love it, but we never get credit. That's why, like, I always love it if, like, there's an Oscar thing or, like, there's some award, like, best VFX. I'm like, great, because these guys deserve,
Curious.
like, put a name down, like, something like that. Because they're always, What was it? There was one guy interview. He worked on Transformers, and he was just like, I felt like the guy secretly working in the closet and then just like sliding a note underneath the door. And he's like, here you go, master. And like, that was not on record. He did not want to do that. I'm not going to say who it is, but like, he was definitely like, I feel like that guy just like every now and then I turn something in, I come out from the darkness, like Smeagol looking thing. I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah, that's how they kind of treat us. I'm like, God damn.
Yeah, there's so many talented creative people that no one really knows about. And, you know, having done that stint in video games, I would work with a team of 3D artists or a team of animators and just be blown away by what they were doing and adding to the game, you know, each of them individually and as a team. It wasn't me. I'm not sitting there taking credit for the animation. It was amazing to me.
Yeah, it's a teamwork thing. I think, and that's why I think a lot of people, we were just saying with the games, like a lot of creative stuff, comics, movies, film, video games, all of it, hell, even making toys. It's a teamwork activity here. And it's not just like one person. Like every now and then you see, you know, Todd McFarlane, he puts out like a thing like, oh, the artist did this for a toy thing, but not as much. But, you know, you still see a thing there of it. And I think a lot of people just need to recognize this is a teamwork activity. Like even when doing a podcast, that takes team. Like, there's multiple people that do this stuff here, and like it's a whole thing. And it's, you know, even my wife has contributed to that because she's like, I gotta, like, you're taking time out of the day. I'm like, damn it. She's like, okay, here you go, you do that. It's a whole thing. But it's definitely this crazy thing about it these days. But, you know, David, kind of wondering here though, now you've been doing a business for a long time, you said you're starting 13 14. What was that thing that inspired you?
It's just wanting to start, right? Like, I didn't get a professional start until, unless you're Joe Matarero, who I understand started at like 16.
Yeah,
he's a one in a million, but like genius level.
What started it though?
Yeah, like, when I actually started was sometime in the mid 2000s. So okay. You know, I've only been doing it since then, but definitely 13-year-old me was 100%, and I was dedicated to it. Yeah. It was just how many years would it take for me to get the skills to be invited, you know,
and actually be like, this is good enough, I swear. Like, it's that whole like out of hustling thing, like, this is a high school sketch I did on my assignment notebook, does this count? And they're like, well, not yet.
Yeah, I never actually had that problem. I had the opposite problem where I was really down on my own stuff, and I was kind of I knew it was bad when it was bad, and you know, I would probably just hide it, you know. Yeah. More than I'd be resistant to show anyone when I probably should have.
You're like, you're your own worst critic sort of thing, and you're like, oh, I'm gonna just take this away. Meanwhile, everyone's like, did you know he did really good artwork? And it's like, oh yeah. Oh man.
Yeah, I've gotten to the point in my career where I finally kind of feel some happiness and joy in the art that comes out, but it took a long time.
That for a took long 30 time,
I'd
years.
On, I'd just be nervous about it.
Oh, it really took that 30.
Pretty much. That's it. Yeah.
Man, I mean, well, I'm glad you're at a good point now, though, that you actually feel the happiness with your art and you're actually appreciative of it, though.
I'm getting there. I can be proud of something when it comes out now in a way that I couldn't have maybe 5 years ago. I was still like imposter syndrome for a long time. You know, I never want to get a big head about anything I accomplish. I definitely don't want to be there. And I don't think I ever will, because I spent so many years in the trenches that it would be impossible to forget that. Yeah. But at least I can be proud of something when it comes out now.
You're a very humble man. I got to put that out there, though. You're a very humble creator. I got to say.
Thank you.
Yeah, like, you're very, very simple. Like, what helped you conquer the imposter syndrome, though, for artists? Because there's a lot of artists there who are facing that even currently today, because they're like, I have so much competition going on. Like, is mine good enough? Like, am I good enough? Like, a little inspiration out there, man. What can you put out there just for our future artists?
I think one thing that helped me get over it was having to be, you know, when you're an artist, in order to get your name out there, you kind of have to do some advertising, right? And these days that means posting on social media and sharing your stuff and kind of putting on your marketing hat when you do it. Yeah. So like when I go on Instagram, I have to write text that says why this piece is cool and why you should want it and why you should care. And so I have to be my own hype person in a way, you know, if I'm doing social media. And then I think because of that, having to be the front person pushing the stuff and trying to build the brand myself, I started feeling more comfortable about actually putting it out there. And what I see is a lot of great artists never hyping their own stuff. Very few artists are actually out there very often, you know, saying, hey, here's my new piece. I'm really excited about it. That's really rare. And I wonder why. I mean, to some extent. On the other hand, the artist part of me totally understands the, you know, be quiet in the corner part of being an artist, and you know, that person not wanting to be too out there in the public. But man, if you're gonna get any kind of visibility, who else is gonna do it but you? You got to be out there and tell people about your stuff.
I like that. That's honestly perfect, because like you're absolutely right. You have to be your best hype man. Like, you have to be able to be, if you're not hyped about it, who will be? You know, like, it's a thing there. Like, we got plenty of people who would say your stuff's great. I mean, I feel like my wife's obligated to say my stuff's great, but you know, like, it's a whole thing there. And if you're not hyping yourself up, but you get it though. I mean, as a writer, I mean, it's definitely a thing. As an artist, I don't do the magic of art, but as an artist, I can imagine that too. It's you gotta have that hype behind yourself. I like that. I like that. You can make that a t-shirt.
Yeah, man. I will do that.
Yes.
As a writer, I've always wondered about this exact problem from a writer's point of view, because when you're an artist, you can put a picture out there and it says a lot. You can judge very quickly whether art is good to your eye, right? But with writing, someone's at least got to devote some time to reading it before they can decide whether it's good.
Yeah.
So if you're a young writer, how do you hype yourself? I have never understood that process.
I'll give you some behind the scenes. It's a lot of, you know, giving your stuff to people, say like close friends, and then also like family members. It's a little bit of that. And then from there, you give it to other people as well too. And then you ask, and you have to sit down. Like, the big thing is you have to sit down with that person that you give your stuff to and say, hey, I need honest feedback. Like, you can't lie to me, because it's me. You have to tell me. And it's tough. Like, and so some people are like, I don't have time to read it or whatever the hell. And it's really tough to do that. And sometimes there's writers who I know who pay artists to get their stuff made. So like, they'll, so they kind of, even though like nothing may come of it. Like, it's why I see a lot of writers do concept art, is because they're like, I want to at least see what this looks like. So a lot of writers I know will just pay for concept artists. And they're like, here's $200, or here's however much you're asking for. Can I see what this looks like? Or a sketch or something like that too. And that's kind of where it's a little bit difficult. Like, you know, especially people, you see it online all the time. Like, how do you hustle for comics, especially too? Like, how do you get that going? You know, how do you be here's a binder. Here's a binder like this thick. And here's a great story for you. I have this wonderful thing. Do you have any artwork? No. Well, it's a pleasure doing business. I'm like, well, what the hell? Come on, two sentences, please.
Yeah. I was going to, it makes me think of Brian Bendis, you know, like he is known as a writer now, but he got started by being his own writer artist.
Yeah.
You know, he got his stories out there by just biting the bullet and drawing it himself. Darn
yes,
it. You know,
like, yeah. That's the other option you can do too. Yeah, I'm not that talented. I'm not that talented at all. I'm getting hiccups and laughing about it. Yeah, I'm not that talented to do both. So it's a lot of like Photoshop, I guess one could say, in some spots, for like a quick little sketch. But you're right, Bendis did it. He was a smart man. That's why he became Bendis. But you know, it's a lot of that. It is a little bit of stress on there. I mean, you guys, like, the amount of, it's equal in the amount of stress, because I don't want to say writers have more. It's because it's like the amount of stress you guys have to make sure your stuff looks good. But then like the writer is the equal amount of like what a writer has to do for the stuff. So it's about even for between writers and artists for like the amount of stress and hustling. It's crazy though. It's still crazy. It's still a large amount, but it's tough, I think. But every writer has their avenues of it. Some put it out online, to be honest with you. There's people who go to Reddit secretly and do it. I've heard of that. And they're like, here's a script, or they leak it out. They do the Ryan Reynolds Deadpool thing. They're like, just put a few scenes out there from a thing. We'll see what people think about it.
It worked for him.
Worked for him in a lot of ways. But yeah, that's how writers kind of do it. And it's so fun though. I think you can still say the same as being an artist. Like, it's still fun to do. Like, people look upon it, like people who aren't a creative, they look at our hustling, they look at the stress, you know, the nights where we're staying up late, weird scheduling, and they're like, why do you do it? I'm like, well, because it's fun. Yeah. Hey guys, Dakota here with a little bit of an ad break for you, and right now, you may be wondering, how can I make a little bit of extra cash while supporting the podcast? Well, let me tell you how. The saloon doors are open, folks. You guys can support the Comic Chronicle podcast by having an ad in the show. That's right, folks. You guys can take a break from my annoying-ass voice and have an ad for your thing here in the show. To make things clear, we're not doing things political, because we don't really get political on the show that much. So, if you guys do enjoy the show, and you want to give a little bit to the show, while also making some cash back for whatever it may be for you, or supporting something that you do, whether it's a YouTube page, a podcast, a book, whatever it may be, your upcoming event, I can put an ad in for you guys, whether make it myself or you have a pre-recorded ad, that is up to you. Now, if you guys want to do an ad here in the podcast, you can go and email me at filmworld, that's filmworld97@gmail.com. Email me there, we can work out all the logistics. So if you guys want to support the show and support your thing as well, come on down. And guess what, folks? Email that email. Now, let's get back to the show.
Yeah, I've talked to a lot of professional artists. Sometimes I'm sitting at a comic show and the logical question to ask your neighbor is like, you know, when did you know you want to be an artist? How'd you get started? And I keep hearing the same story over and over, which is that they just had it in their blood. They knew it early on. They had to do it. It was a compulsion. It was a requirement. They were going to be creative in some way, regardless. And they knew it instantly. Yeah. Yeah. So I feel like that, you know, the creative spirit is just a thing that you're wired for or you're not. Yeah. And people, you know, have to pursue it if they are wired for it.
It's true. Yeah. You'll always do something. Like, and there's people who I know who have been retired and they don't do anything creative anymore, but they still do a business. And they're like, oh, I'm doing this. I'm like, well, what are you doing for your promo? They're like, oh, I make the artwork for it. There you go. You're still doing it. Don't say you're not. You're still doing something like that. And it's, you're right, is there's always gonna be something doing. Like, I don't work in film anymore, but I still write, you know, still doing comics, you know, we do a podcast, and even if you don't make money from it, you still do it.
Mm-hmm. That's yeah. it's a requirement. And you know, I have two kiddos, and one is just not into the creative stuff at all. He likes aircraft and military things, and that's great, you know, more power to him. But I more than ever I understand that people are just wired differently.
Yeah. It's weird. It's like, whether, I mean, therapists can deep dive and say this one incident did it, but maybe that's the case. But yeah, I think people are just wired differently. Like, everyone's wired in different things. So like, what makes them happy? What makes them different and stuff like that? But it makes us kind of great too.
We got really deep
on this podcast.
I know. I was like, this is the creative talk shop conversation right here. Usually, and I'm glad for it, to be honest, because sometimes I find that in podcasts I'm asked the same sorts of questions. So I've gotten really good about answering, like, where'd you go to school? who are your favorites, you know? Like, I have a great answer for those questions because I've done it so many times, but it's nice to talk about different things, and the philosophy about creativity is not a common question, so good to talk about it.
And that's the point of this show is meant to have conversations. I hate doing the time interview questions, like you were saying, like, what happened here, what was the first, like no, let's have a talk. Let's just talk. Hey, there's been people who've been on this show while barbecuing burgers. I shit you not. That's amazing. They're just like, you mind if I'm cooking? No, not at all. And I think I was eating something too. I had like some pizza rolls with me, and I'm like, you mind if I eat pizza rolls? And we had a whole talk, and this was like some big wig at DC, and we just had like this whole talk of just doing that. I'm like, oh, this is great, and we had a good time, and like, we keep in contact too, and it's great.
That's amazing.
Oh man, you just get fun with it, you know. You have the same stuff everywhere, but I do have to ask you something, and this is not a time interview question thing, but this is a weird thing.
Yeah.
You currently live in, if you don't mind saying, you currently live on an island, I guess we could say.
That's true.
Yes. Yeah. Do you wish to say where, or because?
Yeah, sure. I think I've said it many times, but I live in Hawaii. I live in Honolulu, born and raised. Hey. And after that jaunt in video games, which required living in California, we moved right back here. Because if you're going to, you know, if you're going to pay those high prices of living in a city, you may as well live in Hawaii, right? It's about the same, and close to family. So it made a lot of sense for us to just move back home.
Nice. The wife and I are looking at moving to Hawaii. That's like one of our things that we want to do, because we want to move a few places before we, you know, eventually croak. So we're like, you know, Hawaii, like, I had a friend of mine move from Chicago, because I'm from Illinois originally. I may be in Arizona, but almost 20 years in Illinois. And so we moved here, and Hawaii, the wife and I have been thinking, like, Hawaii seems like a place. Is it true? Like, you moved back, obviously.
Yeah, no, I it's really the only place I feel truly at home. Like I was fine in California, but the moment we moved back, I kind of just felt myself kind of relaxing and letting out a deep breath and feeling like, okay, this is where I'm meant to be. Now, for Hawaii is wonderful. It is like being in another country because it's unique in some ways because it has its own, language, music, food, there's the whole there's the whole Hawaii culture, the hula and all this stuff that's unique to here. It is absolutely part of the United States, but there's so much unique about it. In many ways, you feel like you're in another country. And that can be good or bad. Like when I go to Japan, I get that feeling like that is truly a different society, different from anywhere you'd be in the mainland US. And I love that. And I feel that in Hawaii too. Now, some people can acclimate to it really well, and they love what's novel and fun and interesting about it. And some people are like, this is a culture shock. I cannot get my head around this. This island is too small. Get me out of here. I find like, when I lived in California, if you really thought about it, we didn't get that far from home. Like you'd only go, an hour or two away from home or beyond that, rarely, right? So in Hawaii, this island, you can circumnavigate the whole thing in maybe 6 to 8 hours, something like that. That's how big the island is. So for me, I don't really get much farther away from home than I did even in California. Sure, I can't hop and go cross country, but what's different about being on this island? I don't get any farther than I did before, and I can get to beaches now.
That's
So
true. That's true. And honestly, you're taking a flight no matter what these days because you're not paying for, I mean, you pay the same in gas prices or if you're driving, but most likely you're going to take a flight anyway if you're going somewhere. So either way, if you live in Hawaii, you're just
probably.
paying a little bit extra for the flight, but you're still going. You're
Right.
selling me.
So
You're really selling me. Okay. All right.
mathematically, it doesn't seem that different from when I lived in California, but
No.
it's the culture. So if you can get your head around the culture, if you love the culture, you get the benefit of like wow, they have really great Japanese food here. Wow, the 7-Elevens have the best bamboo soup I've ever had. That kind of thing is really fun and unique.
I like
But then
that.
even within Hawaii, there are some differences. Like this is Oahu Island is where the bigger buildings, the more population, the tourist center, like that's what's here. And I love it. But some people hate that and they want to be on a very quiet, uninhabited experience like Kauai. Like there aren't that many people living on Kauai by comparison, and it's natural, natural beauty, that sort of thing. So there are these two Hawaiis, even within this one, so yeah, you got some choices.
I like it. We're big on culture and we're big with nature too. Like we're big in, like my wife's literally doing a hike right now up a mountain as we're doing this recording. And hopefully she's okay because it's really hot out tonight. But yeah, I was just realizing that it was actually like it's toasty, it's 80 degrees. But taking a look at that, actually fine. But we're big nature lovers and big culture people, so I like that a lot. And we like different cultures and one or two. Like it's I think she's gonna
Well,
listen to
definitely worth
this.
visiting. You guys
Yeah,
should definitely come and visit. Yeah, this podcast brought to you by the Hawaii Board of Tourism.
If they paid me the amount of money they pay on those billboards, whoa, we're good. Oh, I
Yeah.
had to set for a while. They're like, what happened? He got a studio. Did you hear? He's not doing it in his
I'll
home
watch for
office
that
anymore.
check in my mail.
Oh, the guy who lives in Hawaii doesn't get paid, but the one who lives in Arizona gets paid. That sounds about right, though. Oh, man.
On a comic book and Hawaii note, one thing I just turned in today is a Usagi Yojimbo cover, my first
Really?
ever Usagi Yojimbo cover. For real, yeah, I'm so psyched about it because
What?
Stan Sakai is such a legend. That series is so awesome, and he is such a legend, such a nice guy, and has roots in Hawaii. And I remember when I was a little kid, my mom randomly took me to the library one day because there was an art lesson, being given. And you know who was giving? It was Stan Sakai. He was
Is it really?
just there
Whoa!
at a public library teaching little kids how to draw.
What
And I
the?
happened to be there, and it was amazing. And I had no idea what that was, but years later I put that together and I realized, oh wait, that was Stan Sakai. Like, and so when I've seen them to get books signed, I'm like, I told him that story. And like that was sort of foundational for me and meaningful to me and helped get me into comics. So full circle, drew an Usagi cover, pretty happy about it.
Wow. You really made the full circle there. Look at you. 30 years later, you're happy about your work. You did a cover full circle. Like, you're doing pretty good.
Not too bad. It's going pretty well.
Wow. It's a funny moment when you just realize this stuff. I mean, was he appreciative of it though? Was he kind of like, really? Like, was he really like happy about it? Or was he kind of like, eh, whatever?
Well, it's, I don't know. He's calm, but super friendly. I don't get the impression that, you know, he goes, wow, you know, like he's not like a bold expression, you know, explosively expressionistic guy.
Yeah.
But man, he was so, so nice and friendly. And then when I told him that story, it seemed like, you know, he got a big smile, you know, and he basically offered to do a little doodle in our in our book for us. So I think that was his way of showing some appreciation for that. But I didn't even need that. I just wanted to tell him. My only goal was to give him that little piece of love.
Yeah, I love that. I love that a lot. I mean, shoot, I don't, I'm looking at time. I don't want to take too much more of your time today. But that's an amazing story right there. Look, this has been a great TED Talk. But you're speaking of that, so you just turned it in, but like, is there anything you want to promote right now? Anything people should go check out to help support you and whatnot as we're near the end of the show?
Oh, thanks for asking. The thing I'm really excited about right now is I have two ongoing series that are just really working for me creatively. Like I've now been on the Catwoman series on the main covers for almost like a year and a half now. So 16, 17 consecutive issues, which is a record for me. So yeah, cool. You can tell I'm liking it, having stuck it out this far. And these opportunities do not come around very often. Like most books, they'll go 5 issues and then they'll turn it over to something else. So yeah. 16 consecutive issues and still going is a big deal to me. It's a rare one in that, you know, when you do covers, you don't always know where it's going to land. Like, is it going to end up on a book that's awesome? Or is it going to be on kind of a mid book? You don't really know until it comes out. But Catwoman, you know what I'm saying? Like, you can't predict it. You have no idea. Oftentimes they won't even tell you what the book is like, the title of it is necessarily. Things change. But the contrast to that is Catwoman, because it's written by Teenie Howard, and she is so, so good. She writes a great script. I've never liked the character of, you know, Selina Kyle as much as reading this, and that was before I even started working on it. So it's just a thrill to work on that. So Catwoman. And then the other one is Thundercats, which goes right to my 80s nostalgia. I just turned in the 5th cover for that, and that's Declan Shalvey writing and Drew Moss on art. And like, if you ever watch that cartoon, it's a little bit like the writing of it. If you go back and look at it as adults, it's a little loose. But what these guys have come in and done is taken all the bones of it and actually fleshed it out into a compelling series that even an adult can get a satisfying story out of. They're adding things to the lore that are fascinating. This is a great series worth checking out as well. So those two books are what I would point people toward. Catwoman and Thundercats.
Love that. And I mean, one, Catwoman's a big name. So you got that. And like that long of time, you are right, is very impressive, because these days you don't see that. Also, Thundercats, by the way, doing that. And I've read a little bit of it. Great. And also, they're in the same realm for me as Gargoyles is right now, because Gargoyles is also doing that thing where they're like, we made this for all ages, but for the adult fans, you're going to get a little bit more here and you're going to know what's going on.
That was my previous book. It is. And for the exact same reason you said, I was on that book for covers for a whole year.
You were.
That was a really fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun doing that. And as soon as we were done, straight to Thundercats. So working with Dynamite has been just like a gift.
Where do you go from Thundercats? If you do Gargoyles, Thundercats. The only other one would be.
I mean, Thundercats was a. What's better than that? I have no idea. But Thundercats was a complete surprise. You know, we had just finished up Gargoyles. I thought maybe, you know, they still have the Disney license. Maybe I can stick around for some more Disney stuff. Mm-hmm. But they surprised me. They're like, hey, how about Thundercats? And I'm like, yeah, but yeah.
Yeah, you're like, yes, yes. You mean to tell me this big iconic brand? That you may, oh, yeah, no problem. Yeah. If I say no, shoot me. Like, that's where I'm at. Like, you're like, this, like, what is going on? Why would I say no?
No, who would? I mean, especially if you came of age watching that show, you have a lot of nostalgia for it. And I've gotten to the point where I won't take something. This is a luxury, but I won't take something unless I personally love that thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's not worth the time. It's not worth the investment or the money. The money is, be it as it may, it's not worth it to me unless I love it. It's hard to sit there for the hours it takes to make the cover unless I'm like feeling it. Fortunately, I feel a lot of stuff. I'm like nostalgic for anything in Marvel DC, any 80s stuff. Like there are a lot of things I really like. Any movie I've just watched and fall in love with, any video game, like there are a lot of things that David likes.
Yeah,
but
it makes it easy for shopping for Christmas, as my family likes to say sometimes with my wife. Let me tell you, everyone's like, and my friends are like, yeah, it's easy as hell to shop for you because you like everything. I'm like, that's fair. that's fair.
It's a good way to be. Yeah. But it, you know, since I've learned that about myself, I no longer have to think too hard. Like, well, I don't know if I really love this. Should I not take it? I've learned that if I feel that way, I shouldn't take it.
I like that. I like that a lot. It's almost not selling yourself out in a way. You're just like, I don't want to sell myself out. You're like, important. You're recognizing your time. You're recognizing your talent. You're recognizing your energy in yourself. Like you're recognizing all of that. And that's really cool.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
Yeah. I mean, kind of tying it into too, because like I said, it's near the end of the episode. Social media, we mentioned it before. Where could people give you a follow at? So that way you can all can boost everything up and stuff.
Thanks. Yeah. Fortunately, I'm really easy to find all over social media. Whatever platform you're on, I'm just at David Nakayama.
That's
easy
fair.
As that.
Yeah, that's fair. Simple enough. Well, David, thank you for coming on the show, man. This has been a blast to have you on here. If people don't get anything from this episode, they're a fool.
Well, I hope it was useful. I'm really glad we got such a wide ranging and deep conversation about art. I can tell you are fellow creative yourself, and these conversations only happen when that's true. So
thank you, man.
Good to talk with you. Thanks for having me on the show.
Of course. You take care. I'll email you everything too when the episode's out, but you take care. Okay.
Perfect. Good talking with you. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Adios.